You don't need a system outage to know when your PPE isn't delivering what it should. Maybe pricing takes an extra step to verify, maybe updates are taking longer than expected, maybe your team has built workarounds just to keep loans moving. What starts as a few small delays can gradually become the way the work gets done. The reality is, a modern PPE should do more than provide pricing. It should deliver real-time accuracy, seamless workflow execution, intelligent automation, and the confidence to act without hesitation. It should help your team move faster, operate more efficiently, and focus on performance, not process. So ask yourself, is your PPE helping your organization perform at its full potential, or is it forcing your team to work around its limitations? Take a closer look at what you should expect from a modern pricing engine. Visit optimalblue.com/optimalblueppe. Again, that's optimalblue.com/optimalblueppe. Stop accepting friction as part of the process. Make sure your PPE is helping your team move faster, execute smarter, and capture every opportunity.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Senior Vice President of Hedging and Trading Operations at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here. We have a great show for you today. We're here to help you focus on what's important, whether you're an originator, a capital markets person, or just someone who's interested in the mortgage industry and some great market commentary. James and I will have a market update here in a second. We'll talk about what's been going on with the jobs report and a couple other things that happened over the weekend. And then Mike and Brennan will join for a preview of the Market Advantage Report. So look forward to that every single month. They'll be on here in a few minutes to talk through that. So stay tuned. Before we get into that, in the way of data, the OBMMI, the conventional 30-year, over 6.5%. Again, we got routed pretty well on Friday. As you all likely know, stocks and bonds just got hammered on the heels of the jobs report, which we'll talk about here in a sec. 10-year, 4.56 right about this moment. Potentially going to hit another record here if that keeps spiking. We hit 4.6 like a week or two ago, and that was the highest we had seen in like 15 years. So approaching that level again. So let's get right into the market update. James, welcome. James Cahill, how you doing?
Not too bad, Jim. Another Monday rolls back around, right? And they keep coming.
That's right. And this time I missed, I was not in the office on Friday. I did sort of casually watch the jobs report from afar, but it looks like sort of par for the course. It feels like I'm a little surprised that we took as bad of a beating as we did, even with some of the reading I've done this morning. But we saw 172,000 jobs. We expected something a little cooler, like 80,000. You know, as we've talked about before, 90,000 job miss is not enormous in an economy of, you know, 180 million or so workers. So I mean, what do we make of this? And it seems the market's making of it that we're going to see a rate hike this year, almost for sure at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, 172, right? It's not a absolute gangbuster number, but when you were looking at the expectation of 80K, it's more than double. So that's a great number compared to what we were expecting. It does, you know, hey, go back 22, 23, 24. It might even be a little lighter on the average, but for 2026, this is a great number. Moving in the right direction. We want jobs. We want employment. So it's a good number. The market did start to move to it. The kind of logic there is, well, inflation, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second, but inflation's still creeping up there. The Iran war, gas prices have not been helping that. So the Fed needs to do something about that. The Fed cannot lower rates, though, if the job market is weak. And so if the job market, even if it's not, again, absolute blowout, if it's looking healthier, if it's coming back 172,000 jobs, that's the right direction. That's stability. That gives them some leeway to actually do a rate hike rather than the rate cuts that we were all hoping for 6 months ago.
Yeah, and you mentioned inflation. You know, wage growth came in as well. It comes with the Bureau of Labor Statistics report first Friday of the month. That number is still ticking up. So wages are growing. I think 3.4 was the number you noted. Not quite as high as inflation, at least during the war with Iran, right, where we've seen basically a 1% boost in inflation that's likely coming from fuel costs. But still, healthy wage growth, which is the other component of a healthy job market, right? It's the jobs are being created and maintained, but also that workers are kind of seeing a nominal increase in wages every year that hopefully keeps up with inflation over time.
Yeah, that would be that number I found. It disappoints a little bit for me, right? 3.4% is the wage growth. So, okay, everyone's going to get an end of the year raise, 3.4%. That's pretty good. You know, I think you could be happy with that. But if inflation comes in right now, it's 3.8%. You actually make less money, right? You're able to buy less stuff. So it's a negative raise for the American economy. So hopefully that number keeps creeping up and inflation will cool off a little bit. But I think that it may still tilt the wrong way. But yeah, that was most of last week revolved around those two numbers, the unemployment as well, unemployment rate hitting or staying at 4.3%, right where it was. It's above where the Fed is going to want it, but it's not a terrible number. It's not some 10% unemployment that would really frighten people. Speaking on the inflation, which we've been kicking around, so this week we'll see more of those numbers. So CPI is set to come out this week. Unfortunately, it looks like it's going to land at 4.2% expected core inflation. So ripping out, you know, gasoline prices, it's going to be closer to 2.9. These are, you know, that's higher inflation. That is not the right direction. To note though, if you have been watching average gas prices the way I have over the past 2 weeks, they've actually come down quite considerably, right? Sitting today, we're at an average of $4.16 a gallon. 2 weeks ago, it was $4.55. So it's still, it doesn't have the right handle, but it's 40 cents better in the right direction. We'll definitely take that. It's kind of a hard number for me to get my head too much around. You know, there really is no improvement in the war, and there's a lot of talk about an improvement coming, but this is, you know, what, the fourth month of there's a resolution coming. So I don't quite know how these are coming down besides, well, people are starting to move where they're getting their supply lines from. And it's just, we're getting to a new normal, a number that makes a little bit more sense for the interim.
Yeah, I think new normal is what I'm leaning towards. Is at first, we didn't know if oil was going to go to $100 a barrel, $150, $200 a barrel. So you kind of have to build in some margin there in your gas prices because your inputs are pretty well unknown. But now that we're 100 days into this conflict, it is becoming a little more known that it's going to be status quo for a while, probably, or at least around $100 a barrel, and probably no resolution soon. And even when we do see resolution, it's going to take some time for all this stuff to work itself out, probably through the end of the year, in terms of prices and supplies and refining and repairing whatever's been damaged even during the war.
Agreed. But it will be interesting in this inflation report to see if core and the actual number tighten up any. Because if those gas prices have been coming down, that's one of the main drivers right now is food and oil. And so if those oil prices are coming down a little bit, will we actually see a little bit of improvement there or a tightening? Maybe this 4.2 might be more 4.1, or maybe it'll be 4.2 and that expected is actually going to be 3. So we might see a tightening there, something just to watch.
So then we will get producer inflation, right? That's coming out Thursday. That's expected to be way up just again because of fuel, right?
Yeah. So the number is going to be sitting somewhere. It's currently around 6%. It looks like it'll be 6.6%. So that's a pretty fierce inflation number. That's not the one you want to see, but it is, that number is difficult to deal with because it's all the supply side, right? There's no, the Fed can't really lower the interest rate and help that out. It all is what can you actually get your hands on. So we'll probably see that number continue to drive maybe a little, again, little relief on it because gas prices have come down just a bit, but producers are probably taking a hammering this summer.
Yeah, and that's a super hot number and eventually will make its way down to consumers, but it does feel like the producers are just eating some of that cost right now as they've done with tariffs in the past and other kind of shocks like this. So this doesn't seem to be leading to a rate hike for next week's meeting. So there's a Fed announcement next week expected to just hold steady. But the market beatdown that we saw on Friday was likely the realization that we're almost certainly going to get a hike in the fall, whereas previously it was sort of, call it a 20-30% chance.
At the time of recording, we're 9 days out from a FOMAC meeting. And in fact, it's going to be Walsh's first meeting as the president. So definitely something to watch there. Listen to what he has to say, what the minutes reflect. It's going to set the tone for, you know, the foreseeable future as to how we're going to be working in this interest rate environment. He's coming into a tough spot. He would love to come in, cut interest rates, work with the administration, make that happen, make everyone on our side pretty happy too. But based on what we're seeing inflation-wise, based on what we're seeing with some job stability, it makes sense to put in a rate hike rather than that rate cut that we're all waiting for. So it seems, you know, if you check out the CME, you're looking ahead, this June, July, August meetings, we're not projected to see any movement. But come October, November, December, there's a very good chance, you know, 60, 70, 80% that we are going to see a rate hike. And so as that adjustment has been swallowed, baked into the market, that's where a lot of this movement over the past couple days has really been coming from.
Right. Well, we'll have to see. It feels like that's too far in the future for anybody to know what the heck is going to happen. But like you said, something to watch. And then I got to bring this up in the, kind of the category of bizarre headlines from last week. We saw Bill Pulte, who's currently the head of the FHFA, also the head of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, was appointed the Director of National Intelligence. I don't have much to say about that other than that was a strange thing to see, and it's apparently going to at least be acting director of National Intelligence. It's an interesting thing for our industry because he has so much on his plate right now between running the GSEs and talk of possible release from conservatorship, talks of rates being too high and maybe changing how pricing looks and the stuff going on with credit models and all that. And now he's going to run National Intelligence for the, you know, probably largest operation of that kind in the world, maybe outside of China or Russia. Anyway, what do you make of that? Anything that we should be keeping our eye on other than, I don't know, hopefully they find someone who has a little less on their plate to take that role over time. But
he's definitely an interesting pick, I suppose. The argument is, well, he already deals with a lot of very sensitive information, which that's true. You know, that's a transferable skill, I suppose. If anyone at the CIA is interested in me, you know, I'd love to go to Fiji and, you know, report back to all of you. But I find it interesting just the recurring cast characters we have right now, right? Pulte getting this job tap. And then meanwhile, the first person to speak up saying, I don't think that's a good idea is Republican Senator Tom Tillis, who, of course, was blocking Walsh. He's a lame duck. He's not running again, so he'll be primaried this summer. He'll be gone by January. But still, there is some pushback, and it's pushback, again, from familiar characters on this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, Tillis, he's using his lame duck phase to at least be vocal about things he doesn't like. And it's obviously in this administration and probably in others, speaking up is often puts a target on your back, right? So if you ever want to be voted into any sort of office again, you have to be careful what you say and who you vote against. But in his case, he's essentially retiring, as I understand it. So he's speaking his mind, and he spoke his mind in this case as well. As you said, he also blocked Walsh until the criminal charges were dropped against Jerome Powell. So another situation to keep an eye on. And I think you also wanted to mention the SpaceX IPO. That's a monster. That is big news, regardless of of whether you're into space or Tesla or follow. It's just the dollars that they're talking about is just kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, on the flip of the bond market, of course, stock market's continuing to do pretty well. And so coming this Friday, June 12th, is expected the IPO of SpaceX. It will be the largest IPO in history. A share price is like $135 a share. So the full valuation comes to $1.77 trillion, which is a shocking number. Congratulations to them, I suppose. I suppose I hope they get it. It's crazy just to think in trillions. You know, the US GDP right now, it's 34, 35 trillion. But so one company is worth, you know, 1/16 of what the national debt, not the GDP, but one company is worth the 1/16 of the national debt is kind of it's a big thought that someone is in theory producing enough revenue and is going to be worth this much. It also, of course, pushes Elon Musk. He's already the wealthiest person in the world. This will increase him by about $250 billion. So he will become the world's first trillionaire. So in theory, just on Friday, world's first trillionaire, we have one. We did it. Round of applause for all of us. You know, hard work. We got it done. Pushed him through. Team effort.
Yeah. It is wild. I mean, we've talked about it before. We talked about it last week, even how there's just the economy of the world, especially of the U.S., and then the money supply at the same time has grown so significantly over the past 7 years that these sort of things are allowed to happen. Like a $1 trillion valuation for any company didn't exist 5 years ago, right? The big tech companies have risen to those levels fairly recently. Surpassed it by far, doubled it, tripled it. I think you talk about Microsoft, Apple, Google. These are all NVIDIA. These are all $1 trillion businesses now, where that used to be kind of the pie in the sky. And now we have a human who's going to be worth $1 trillion. Just insane. But that's the future, right? SpaceX is doing a lot of things that we wouldn't have really thought about 5-10 years ago either. So excited to see how that all kind of works out. All right. What else do we have today, James?
That about covers us. You know, looking ahead, it's just inflation this week. So watch out for that. Again, I'd listen to what Warsh has to say. First meeting, it's really going to set the tone. Otherwise, look out for Friday.
That's right. All right. Thanks a lot, James. Great conversation. Talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Great conversation. Thanks again, James. We will now hand it over to Brennan and Mike, who will give you the preview of the Market Advantage report.
Welcome to the Market Advantage segment for the month of May. Brennan, you want to kick us off with some of the origination trends?
Yes. Thanks, Mike. Welcome, folks, to another edition. Let's see. Tough month. Some headwinds on the rate side. Macro environment certainly challenging. So mortgage rates moved higher across all major product groups during the month. Our OBMMI 30-year conforming rate, that's the index rate for the CME futures contract, finished the month at 6.44%, up 13 bips month over month and more than 50 bips over the past 3 months. Still roughly 40 bips better than the same time last year. So, you know, something to point to, I guess, there. Jumbo rates were up 27 bips to 6.7. FHA increased 21 bips to roughly six and a quarter. VA climbed 15 bips to just over 6%. The 10-year treasury finished 4.45, up modestly on the month, but the spread widened between treasuries and mortgage to nearly 200 basis points. So mortgages trailed treasuries in a month when we already saw rates moving in the wrong direction from an origination perspective. The lock activity pulled back, as you'd expect. Total volume was down 9% month over month, but again, still up 7% versus the same time last year. So, you know, it is a relative thing. I think Q1 was a little bit stronger. We felt maybe a little bit better than we do as we get into the early summer months here, given some of the macro trends. But all in all, I think we're still in a better position right now than we were, say, 12 months ago. Purchase refi split. Not surprisingly, rates go up. Purchase market takes a larger share. So we're up to 81% of total lock volume purchase activity in May. Purchase locks declined 5% month over month, but they're still up 3% year over year. Refi activity is really where you saw the kind of fall off in lock activity. So refi retrenched another 30% on the rate term side month over month, and cash outs were down 13%. How has that impacted product mix and some of the other categories of lending here? We've seen ARM utilization increase. Again, I think folks looking for alternatives when your sort of vanilla 30-year mortgage options are not as attractive, folks find different lending outlets. And so you see ARM utilization up just under 11% of total volume in May. Non-QM up and actually hit just over 9%, you know, really getting close to that double-digit mark in terms of total lock volume. So that's our highest that we've seen on record. So it's been a little bit bumpy in the last few months, but again, non-QM just kind of continues that secular trend. And I think the higher rate environment and maybe more of those, you know, traditional borrowers backing out leave space for these other, maybe more esoteric products. Average loan amounts held mostly steady. We're sitting just under $400,000 for the average loan amount right now, $396,000. Still sort of a crazy number to talk about when you think about that just being the average, $400,000 for the average borrower. Rates ticking higher, first-time homebuyer percentages coming down across the board. So from an affordability perspective, I think you'd expect this, but conforming first-time homebuyers are down to 44%, FHA at 69%, and VA at 44%. Credit quality remaining strong. I think, you know, as you think, basically affordability becoming more challenging, folks that maybe have lower credit scores not able to take out loans. And so you see pretty strong average credit quality across the board. And the only other item, you know, I think is worth looking at is this pull-through rate deteriorating in May. I don't know that I have a real strong opinion on it, Mike, but maybe that's a good segue into some of the things we're seeing on the capital markets or the secondary side. Any input on pull-through and other broader categories in the space?
Yeah, the pull-through number really stuck out to me as well. It was quite a drop, especially on the refinance pull-through, which could make sense given the state of the rate movement we saw throughout the course of the month. So, you know, theoretically, you know, if you were thinking about shopping around and you know, you're maybe an application kind of like half filled out and rate quoted, and all of a sudden rates go up, it could actually force people onto the sidelines. So you could see folks who, you know, potentially maybe weren't fully vested in refinancing or being in the market, but that you know, jump in rates that we saw this month forced folks to the sidelines is the major trend that I'm kind of pontificating about there. And, you know, just building off that to some of the other trends we observed, you know, best effort mandatory spread remained unchanged this month for conventional 30-year loans, staying at 39 basis points, which is still a pretty rich number. But for 15-year products, it actually increased 4 basis points, and the Govy 30 spread actually decreased a basis point to 11 basis points. So still fairly rich numbers there, so not much to report on. You know, if we see some further dislocation in the market because of some of the chaos from rates driving up, you could see that number widen out potentially more as investors are effectively paying lenders to take on more of that hedge risk and securitization risk. On that front, loan sales this month, we had a big swing to the agency cash window. It jumped from 28% of loan sales in April to 32% in May. Securitizations were down from 44% to 41%. And we saw best efforts drop from 3% to 2%. You know, the big swing here to the cash window could make sense by, you know, as the agencies roll out new spec stories or specified stories, there is an argument to be made that it's more efficient to sell to the cash window because you can sell on a single loan one-off basis and still realize a payup versus securitizing a loan and you need a minimum pull amount of $1 million. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're pulling $85,000 loan amounts, it's a lot. Right, it's a lot of loans in that same type of coupon that you have to aggregate. So we could be seeing things there, and there's been rumors at conferences and on phone calls I take with lenders that the agencies are insinuating that people can get better pricing at the cash window than through securitizations as well, and asking folks to kind of pick a lane there. So it'll be an interesting trend to keep watching. from a loan sale perspective, we saw the share of loans sold to the highest price drop about 2 percentage points this month, dropping from 79 to 77%, with the third ranked price jumping up 1% and to fourth or lower jumping up 1% as well. So there was, you know, some conjecture there that folks are not looking at price, but looking at some of these softer guidelines based on those moves. Another angle that I think could be seen as a positive whenever rates go up is we did see MSRs increase quite materially this month from a valuation perspective, jumping 7 basis points to a 1.36 percentage point price or a 5.44 multiple. This makes sense because on average, OBMMI was up about 15 basis points throughout the course of the month. And this moves lockstep, right? Rates go up, the value of servicing should go up because the prepayment incentive goes down. And there is a world where that increase in price on MSR could counterbalance some of the move up in rate, right? Because obviously price up, rate down, that relationship is an important one there. And the last stat here for us is investor count. We saw investor count hit a recent high of 15 investors bidding on loan sales on average across our clients. Dropped a little bit to 14. I don't really think there's much to fret about here. Probably something along the lines of the increase in rates maybe taking some folks out of the market, but generally I think it's still at a very healthy number from an investor demand perspective. And I think that wraps it up for our May numbers here. Brendan, any closing thoughts?
No, it was good to see many of you in New York at secondary. I guess like pour some out for New York hosting secondary. It sounds like next year we'll all be in Chicago.
Yeah, it was great seeing everybody. It seemed like the vibe at the conference was kind of the same as the previous year, honestly. It seems like folks are getting used to this norm of higher rates now and that we're in like year four of this. And a lot of talk on, you know, non-QM, a lot of talk about ARMs, a lot of talk about AI and whatnot. You know, servicing retention was also a big thing that folks talked to me about. But I'll certainly miss our annual trip to New York in May. And we'll certainly miss, you know, all the other things around there, our time at Carmine's as well. So onwards and upwards to Chicago. I'm looking forward to getting more familiar with that city. Awesome. Well, we appreciate everybody's time. And we'll look forward to next month.
And that's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.